Today, an important reminder and some new data. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, one of the latest posts covering finance and prop news with a distinctively Australian flavour. First, a quick reminder that tomorrow evening, Tuesday at 8 p.m. Sydney time, we're going to run our next live stream event. Here is the link, and it's also in the comments below. Now, on this event, we'll be updating our finance and property scenarios and discussing some of the implications, as well as taking questions from viewers live via the smart chat. And also, ahead of time, if you send me a question via the DFA blog or indeed via the YouTube channel. I've already got quite a few, so there'll be plenty of things to talk about tomorrow, including the question of deposit bail-ins, the question of the deposit guarantee, the cash ban, the trajectory of home prices, and a whole bunch of other things too. So you're invited to join the conversation tomorrow and participate in real time. The show will run for about an hour and a half or thereabouts, and there'll be plenty of time for questions and discussions on all the major issues. And just to get the juices flowing, I thought I'd just share some information that I've been working on to answer some specific questions from some of our viewers. We have quite a few clients and ex-clients who continue to follow our work, and where possible, I try and deal with some of the questions they throw at me. So one question that's come up quite recently and following on from the household survey data that I published quite recently was, what is happening in the refinancing part of the mortgage industry? Well, as we know, there are a significant number of households who are looking to refinance and specifically to reduce their monthly repayments. But I guess the question is, what is the impact on the overall market as a result of this? So to answer that question, I've looked at the latest data that's available and also data from my household surveys, and I've come up with a couple of charts to try and tell the story. And the first picture relates to the proportion of loans financed to all new loan flows for both owner-occupied and investment mortgages. It's quite interesting because the proportion of loans for owner occupation has pretty much been static since the middle of July 2018. Just over 30% of new loans are refinanced. But if you compare that with the investment sector, what we've seen there is a bit of a rise since September last year. And that rise has taken the proportion of investment loans being refinanced to above 35%. Now, the 35% is the proportion of investment loans refinanced compared with all investment loans written in the month. Now we can also look at this in terms of the value of loans refinanced, and this is again new loan flows. And we can see that each month around $6 billion worth of owner-occupied loans are being refinanced at the moment. In fact, that has come down a little compared with 2018. And back in 2016, it was around $7 billion a month. Now, that's a surprising number, I think, for many people, because they would suggest, I think, for refinance has in fact gone up in value. But no, that's not the case. And there's a similar story looking at the investment loan refinancing figures, which is sitting at around $2.5 billion currently. And you can see that that trend has pretty much been moving in that similar range, although it was a little higher back in January and March 2015, where it was over $3 billion. So this tells me that whilst refinancing is a significant factor in the mix, it is actually not as significant as many have been suggesting it is. Now, I had another question, which was, what is the proportion of near or subprime mortgages in the Australian mortgage portfolio? Actually, that's quite a difficult question to answer. Firstly, you've got to define what you mean by the Australian mortgage market. So I've included here banks and non-banks in the analysis. And the second question is, when you say subprime, do you mean at the time of mortgage origination or do you mean in flight? Well, I've chosen to look at in-flight loans. These are loans which are currently being repaid by households. And just to reemphasize again, we look at this not on an individual loan basis, but on an aggregated household basis, because quite often households will have more than one mortgage account. So if we analyze that data, we come up with quite an interesting picture. So the first thing we're going to look at is the near or subprime loan values for those households who are in negative equity. And to read this chart, you need to read this off the left-hand scale, which shows you that around $130 billion of loans in Australia would be classified as subprime or near prime because of the fact that the value of the loan is now higher compared with the value of the property. And interestingly, about two-thirds of those properties are high-rise residential units. And that, of course, directly correlates to the issues relating to poor building construction and other factors. The second dimension is to look at those who are near or subprime relating to income and serviceability. And there we see there's around $23 billion worth of loans outstanding where that is the critical subprime issue. There we have a range of other factors, and those include things like divorce, bankruptcy, or other life-changing events like health-related issues, all of which would potentially put a borrower into the near or subprime category. And more than $40 billion worth of loans would be recorded in this category. So the final question is, what is the proportion of near or subprime loans in Australia relative to the total mortgage portfolio? And the answer is around 11% of households with mortgages in Australia should rightly be classified as sub or near prime mortgage holders. Now, this is a significantly higher number than many would expect to see. But there are a couple of reasons why we're seeing it rising. Firstly, we've seen a significant reduction in the value of properties. We've seen the non-bank sector extend loans to people who perhaps normally would not be able to get loans, even if they're paying a higher interest rate. And thirdly, of course, we've got the other economic issues across the country, which are also putting pressures on income at a time when costs of living are continuing to rise. And finally, it's worth saying, of course, that as interest rates fall further, some households will be able to get out of jail and move away from the sub or near prime region. But my fundamental point is this. It's clear to me that still underwriting standards are not tight enough in Australia. And I'm extremely concerned in particular about the non-bank sector, who are expanding very fast and offering loans to as many people who will take them. And interestingly, Pepper announced today that they're offering now mortgages in New Zealand for both prime, near prime and subprime borrowers in New Zealand. So this is a continuation of an expansion of the non-bank sector into various markets now, including New Zealand. And finally, before I go today, I just wanted to discuss a recent ABC article entitled Global Debt Bomb Fallout Threatens Australian Economy. And it's by the ABC business reporter, Andrew Robertson. And he's focused in on exactly the right issue, which is the question of excessive debt. Excessive debt was a key cause of the global financial crisis, but 11 years on, world debt is much higher, leading many analysts to warn another crisis is on the way, and Australia is far more vulnerable. In 2008, the collapse of Lehman Brothers was the catalyst that froze global capital markets and caused the world's biggest financial catastrophe since the Great Depression. In the United States, unemployment hit 10%, as the country plunged into the Great Recession. Eurozone economies were decimated, led by Greece, which effectively went to the wall. And global stock markets crashed, and in Australia, the Rudd government spent billions to keep the domestic economy afloat. At the heart of the GFC was debt, far too much of it. And a decade later, global debt is 50% higher. According to the OECD, government debt is now at a record $93 trillion and could become unsustainable. Corporate debt, it noted, is even higher at $101 trillion, and that is a combined total of nearly $200 trillion owned by governments and companies. And that has left the OECD worried. Should global economic growth and credit conditions continue to deteriorate, a new bout of financial stress could erupt, and the financial markets could become more vulnerable to episodes of contagion, it warned in its latest Global Business and Finance Outlook. That's exactly what happened during the financial crisis. Aggregate debt, however you slice or dice it, is at new all-time highs, with rates at new all-time lows, but rates can't go much lower, pointed out former ABN AMRO and Morgan Stanley chief economist Gerald Minnick. At the centre of the world's debt mountain is the United States, where total public and private sector borrowings now tops $33 trillion and is rising. That is 17% of global debt concentrated in just one country, albeit the world's biggest economy. A potential flashpoint is the $1.6 trillion in US government bonds held by China. As US President Donald Trump ramps up his trade war, China could hit back by selling those bonds. Not that such a prospect appears to bother the president. If they don't want to renew or re-up, as they would say on Wall Street, that would be fine with us, because we can refinance that very easily, Mr. Trump said last month. There has never been a time when more money has come into our country. That is optimism you'd expect from the US government's salesman-in-chief, but others have a more cautious view. That would certainly be a problem, because a huge sell down by a big owner of US government bonds would put upward pressure on US bond yields, making it more expensive for the US government to service its debt, warned AMP Capital's Shane Oliver. However, fellow economist Gerald Minnick said that the threat of a China sell-down of US government bonds is not as bad as it may seem at face value. I think if they really did see that as a major threat to the ongoing expansion, they would respond and print money to buy it, and that would reduce the impact on interest rates, he countered. It may weaken the US dollar, but I don't think US policymakers would mind that. Of biggest concern is the surge in what is known as collateralized loan obligations, or CLOs, reviving memories of the collateralized debt obligations, the CDOs, based on subprime home loans, which sparked the GFC. Collateralized debt obligations were created by banks bundling up the home loans on their books and selling them as an investment vehicle. When the subprime loans underpinning the CDOs went bad, so did the CDOs, but the debts were magnified. Today, there is more than $900 billion worth of CLOs in the United States alone. Those are similar in structure to CDOs, except that instead of being based on high-risk home loans, they are based on high-risk corporate debt. That high risk requires a high interest rate, and in a low interest rate environment, that has made CLOs extremely popular. It's the old Hemingway thing. How'd you go broke? Slow and then very fast, warned Mr. Minnick. We could just go straight into the very fast phase with corporate debt, given that we have so few conditions placed on most corporate debt instruments these days. In Australia, the big concern is household debt, which now stands at around 120% of GDP and nearly 200% of household incomes. And as the housing market has bounced back in the last few months, individual loans have become even bigger. Add to that is what is happening overseas, and many are wondering if the world is slowly inching back to conditions like those that led to the global financial crisis. However, Shane Oliver is not yet unduly concerned. If you look at the overall picture, I don't think that we have anything like the degree of gearing on the subprime mortgage debts that we saw going into the GFC, he said. It's hard to see a sort of a bubble akin to the US housing bubble like we saw prior to the GFC. Shane Oliver does think a good old-fashioned recession is coming, though, a recession which a ticking debt bomb and the lowest interest rates in history will make worse. And I just want to underscore those collateralized loan obligations, because those risks are real and widespread. And you can add to those a whole bunch of exposures relating to the derivative sector, which is also massive. So like it or not, ahead there are risks on the horizon. And as we'll discuss tomorrow, the question is, how quickly will those risks come home to roost? And if they do, what are the implications which may follow? And so I hope you can join the show tomorrow, and there's still time to get your question in beforehand or participate in the live stream in real time. I look forward to seeing you tomorrow. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.